we move into the 12 o'clock hour here. It's the Christian Arcan Show on a Sunday, WEEI. Want to let everyone know that this is the last Sunday that you are going to hear the Christian Arcan Show on WEEI for a while, because starting on September 7th, it is the return of Football Sunday, NFL Sunday here on WEEI with myself, with Shime, with Mego, and very pleased to announce Big Ted Johnson is going to be on with us as well as a regular host for the duration of the football season on Sundays here on WEEI. Really looking forward to that. Love talking with you guys before they kick off at 1 o'clock. And for more on kickoff, as the Patriots will be kicking off that day as well, and a little bit more, just a little bit more Yankee fan misery, because I can't quite get enough of that today. We're joined now by the Nashua Telegraph's Tom King, who is, along with being one of the longest-serving members of the Patriots beat, also a diehard Yankee fan, and I'm sure doing very, very badly today. How we doing, Tom?
You're talking to the AI version of Tom King. He knows nothing about the Red Sox or Yankees. Nothing at all. I know nothing.
Imagine you, an AI version of you. What would that even be? Just the machine that ate cookies all day?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
What do we need that for? Tom, first, before we get to the Patriots, just real quick, I know you're watching these games. If they get swept today, could Aaron Boone get fired?
No, I don't think Boone is going to get fired during the season. I mean, unless they went on to lose like 12 in a row. I think what's going to happen is that, see, Cashman loves Boone. I don't think Hal Steinbrenner loves Boone. Hmm. From the quotes that I've seen over the years, I read right between the lines. And I think at the end of – Boone's got one more year, I believe, after this year left on his deal. And at the end of this year, though, I would imagine Hal and Cashman, if they don't do well down the stretch and into the postseason, I would imagine Hal and Cashman will have a little bit of a conversation about Boone. And also probably about why you gave away probably the best catcher in your system to the Red right Sox for a minor league pitcher you're not going to see for 3 years. Why you've got no left-handed experienced left-handed first baseman. Why do the Red Sox have that guy that they were able to get from the Nationals, who basically was a lot better of a player than somebody who's usually DFA'd? You know, why don't you make those moves? And I imagine those things are going to come up with Hal. The one thing I want to correct you on is LeMahieu, actually, that was a good signing. He had a great year when he went into free agency, and he was signed at that was a bargain deal that they got him for. And then all of a sudden, LeMahieu turned into a rock. I mean, he just couldn't move. You know, he just got hurt and got hurt and got hurt and got hurt, and that ended his career, basically. So it's just been one of those things. But the Red Sox, you know, don't overlook a couple of things with them. Is since the Devers trade, I think the reason they really survived that is Story. Trevor Story has had a remarkable turnaround.
Yeah.
He was a bum in June. No one liked him. No one wanted him.
And he was a DFA candidate. People were talking about DFAing him.
Yeah, except for the money that they would have owed him. That would have
right
stopped that. And that's one reason why LeMahieu stayed with the Yankees for the last couple of years was the money. Did I get that wrong?
Did I have LeMahieu's years wrong? Because I thought he had like a couple years and he didn't look great. Or maybe he had the two good years and then they gave him the extension.
Is that the way it worked? He was the Yankees' best player. I remember those two years
when he first got from Colorado and he was good. But when did
fabulous
they give him the extension?
Right after one of those good. Right after his last.
Is that right? All right. I guess maybe I mixed up when that happened. But either way, he
right
sucks now.
His
is the point.
Last good year. He was.
All right.
That was the big every year in the offseason when the Yankees, there's a controversy, and the controversy that year was, when are they going to sign LeMahieu? When are they going to re-sign LeMahieu?
Yeah. Okay. All right. LeMahieu. I got that. I'm too worked up today. That's the problem. I'm too excited about the Yankees.
This reminds me, for me as a Yankee fan, of 1975.
Yeah,
but it's a little later than that. In July, I went to a doubleheader at Shea Stadium at the end of July, and it was a 4-game series. And the Yankees could make a move on the Red Sox, or they'd fall out of it. They lost all 4 games. Fred Lynn made some Red Sox fans who are as old as I am, and there are people in this world who are still as old as I am.
Yeah, not many.
Fred, Not many. No, that's true. Fred Lynn. I want to go back to Ruth and Gehrig so bad. But Fred Lynn made a fantastic catch in center field. And it was a doubleheader sweep, and it was a four-game sweep. And right after that, Bill Verdon, the Yankee manager, was fired. But he was replaced by Billy Martin. There are no Billy Martins allowed in baseball anymore. And the thing is if the Yankees do make a move on Boone, it's going to be another yes man who answers to analytics. And that's not what Yankee fans want, but that's probably what Cashman wants, and it won't make a whole lot of difference. The problem with Boone is, who knows what goes on behind closed doors, but if he does have a message to the players, it may be disappearing, and that's not a good sign. And you can't go and call Anthony Volpe in a press conference like he did about 2.5 weeks ago elite. Because Volpe has proven that he is not elite. And they have the utility players that they got in trades at the trade deadline where Volpe should be on the pine. He should have been benched 2 games ago.
Probably,
and they don't do it. So, I had a grin and bear, but you're right. Those last few weeks, it's the Twins, the White Sox, and the Orioles that the Yankees have for the second half, the entire second half of September. And the fraud in the Yankees is to beat up on those teams and lose to the good teams. And that's the way they are this year. And I have to grin and bear it. Oh, it's awful. It's just awful.
No, it's great. And you were right. I just looked up LeMay. I thought for some reason that he got the extension after those bad seasons, but you're right. It was after he was like third in the MVP that year. So my bad. I was wrong about DJ LeMay.
There's no way.
Thanks for checking me there.
There's no way Steinbrenner would even allow that contract to go. But it was a bargain contract. At the time, that was a bargain contract.
Yeah.
And the problem was, is all 6 years, he stunk.
Yes.
So
not been good. Yep. All right. Well, that's good. I'm always happy to hear some Yankee fan coping, and that's always good to hear. But I do want to talk to you about the Patriots and the rat in the organization. King, I know no one sniffs out a rat like you. Who's the rat? Can you tell me who the rat is?
Yeah, the agents. The agents are the rats. I mean, what is Vrabel knows how it goes. Vrabel used to have his agent say stuff. He knows the deal. It's the agents. The players will say, Polk's agent will call somebody and say, hey, look, my guy's not going to make the team this year. He's going to be put on IR. He's going to have surgery. Or at least say he's going to have surgery, and that puts the Patriots at a point where now they have to say, uh-oh, what do we have to do with this player? And it puts the Patriots on the spot. The agents are the guys who leak stuff a lot. Now, granted, are there leaks inside? There are leaks inside every organization. And the thing with, I'm sure somebody did leak about inside the organization, maybe about Duggar and Jennings, the kind of trades. Yeah, I mean, that's to get the word out. But then Vrabel gets up there after the game against the Giants and say, or either it was after that or it was the next day, and talks about how Duggar has been hurt. But the thing is it doesn't look as though Duggar's going to make quite a recovery from his injuries. And they can probably get 75 cents on the dollar if they trade him now. And I think that's what they're looking to do. I don't think you're going to see Duggar get cut. I think you're going to see Duggar get traded. That's what they would like to do. Now, if you're another NFL team, what are you going to try to why trade for Duggar when maybe they might cut him? Or possibly cut him. And you and I have had this conversation before. Trade or sign as a free agent. Now it's trade or pick up somebody who's going to be cut.
Right, but no one really wants Kyle Duggar. Kyle Duggar's not exactly attractive safety in the league.
I think there are teams that would grab Duggar, because don't forget, in the NFL, one of the things that everybody forgets about, they all look at the starting 11, it's depth. You need depth, and that's what the Patriots lack right now in a few positions is depth. And if you're somebody looking for an extra safety or a defensive back, somebody who can defend against the run and maybe not have to go back and play the pass, because that's what Duggar's downfall seems to be a lot. He was much better his first couple of years when he played the run. Is have him, get him on your roster and have him be a run defender and play two downs a series or maybe play 8 plays a quarter, something like that, and see if he can make a difference for you.
All right.
And sign him in a bargain basement contract.
I mean, maybe. We'll see if there's guys, if there's teams out there really looking for a run-stuffing safety who gets, you know, beat on play action all the time, I guess. I don't know. I remember those last couple years of Brandon Merriweather, and then he bounced around a little bit, and then he was out.
Right.
You know, I feel like guys with skill sets like that just don't last that long.
Well, yeah, they don't. They don't, which is why you don't play them that much.
Right.
They're not a regular. You know, play them a depth piece. You get them as a depth piece. If you have them, you know, maybe he can help out. But I don't expect Duggar to be on the 53-man. If he is, he won't be on it for long after the cutdown day. They may end up dealing him. You know, and a lot of moves get made after the 53-man is
true.
Set.
Yep.
So, and there's a lot of extra time to do that, too. Don't forget, because there's, with the new schedule that's, you know, now it's not new anymore. It's 3 or 4 years old. There's that extra week at the end of the preseason. Between, you have 2 weeks before the start of the regular season. So that's a message to the players. Don't rest too easy. You know, we still have a lot of time to make moves.
All right. We're talking with Tom King. Sorry, we're talking with Tom King, Nashua Telegraph, joining us here on the Christian Arcan Show, Sunday edition. You told me, Tom, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about who's been performing well at camp, and you said the number one performer at camp so far has been Drake May. We're through the preseason now, all those games and joint practices, everything's sort of behind them. Do you still feel that way about Drake May?
I don't think he's done great in the preseason games, but I'm not going to go by preseason. I think anytime you make a lot of judgments on a player like that in preseason, you're wrong. So I just think May seems the most comfortable performer right now to me. But we're not going to know until the start of the regular season until they roll it out. The one guy I probably should have mentioned that night is Travion Henderson, because he has been great in every practice and everything else. And the thing with him is now you've got a lot of people who are clamoring to, oh, he's got to be the number one back. And they, no.
Right.
You don't want him carrying the ball awful lot. He's not going to be able to withstand that kind of punishment. So, but he's a guy that can give you he's a guy that's going to make Drake May look good, especially in a passing game. So if Travion Henderson catches the ball in the flat, he could go. He could go at any time, and that's going to give May a lot of yards after the catch is going to go on May's stats. So, but yeah, I'm comfortable with Drake May. I think May has really had a decent preseason. I think he's looked pretty comfortable in the Josh McDaniels offense. And yeah, he's had a couple of days where he's thrown the ball away, but then he's had some days where he's lit it up. And this is a guy who, you know, the Patriots are going to put their stock in. As Drake May goes, so go the Patriots.
And absolutely. I don't know. I mean,
Vrabel knows that.
Yeah.
You know? And so I like what I see so far.
You like that strip sack? You like that throw to Douglas?
You got to protect the football.
Well, these are problems that he had last year, Tom. That's why I was hoping he'd make a leap and sort of leave some of that stuff behind him. It's only been a couple of snaps. He's not playing these whole games, and he's already making these same mistakes in the preseason.
Let's see if he does it in the regular season. That's the one thing. I tell you what, though. How many more conversations have you had about Will Campbell? I haven't had too many, have you?
He's gotten beat a few times. I mean, it's not like he's out there killing it, but yeah,
he's not out there looking bad like he was the first first week of training camp.
Yeah.
So that's going to go a long way as to whether Drake May is going to get strip stacked or not. But I think fumbling and that kind of play, a quarterback is either going to go one way or the other way. And they're either going to get it or they won't. Daniel Jones with the Giants never got it, and he turned the ball over constantly. Drake May is going to have to get it. Otherwise, I'm not going to say he's going to end up in Jones territory. I think he's far more talented than that. But that's going to be a weakness of his, and they'll correct it. I'm sure they will. Or take steps to make sure that he gets extra protection on that side.
I hope so.
But they'll have to do something about it. The turnovers are, turnovers are the name of the game. You know, you take care of the football, you usually win your games.
Yeah, no question about it. Tom, you mentioned Mike Vrabel and the Vrabel May alliance sort of partnership. I mean, we've seen these quarterback and coach relationships sometimes go very well and sometimes not so much, even here in recent history. How do you sort of see that relationship right now, and where do you see it going?
Well, I think it's going to be a good relationship depending on how May plays. If he doesn't play very well, it won't be that great, right?
Probably not, yeah.
I think the main relationship is McDaniels and May. See, May has that buffer. He's got McDaniels in between him and
Vrabel. And Mac Jones, too. Like, Mac Jones' rookie year played well, right? But him and Belichick didn't have a good relationship.
There, right,
yeah.
Right. So, you know, and that's the one thing. So, you know, Vrabel's got a lot of other things to worry about on that team besides the quarterback, but the quarterback is his main guy. But, look, he lived with the quarterbacks he had in Tennessee for a few years and made it to the AFC Championship game. So, he'll call May out. May takes the coaching. I don't think Jones really took the coaching. May takes the coaching, and he knows how Vrabel is, and I think that's a feather in May's cap. And I think that with McDaniels and Vrabel, I think May has got the right leadership to make him a better football player.
Yeah, but I think you're right. And Jones took the coach. He took the coaching from McDaniels. Jones did. Right? I mean, like, that rookie year, he took that. McDaniels was right on his hip every single, after every series, and he was right there taking it.
And then after that, he knew he had a defensive coordinator as his offensive coordinator.
Sure did.
He didn't respect him. Yep. So, and after that, he didn't take coaching for 2 years, and they got rid of him.
Yeah,
so,
and now he's completely ruined. That's the way it works sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't take much to ruin a player in any sport, does it?
No, it really doesn't.
Nope. Not at all.
Surprising, I didn't get ruined working those years with you, honestly. I mean, you know, it could have happened to me, too.
That's true. Somehow you survived.
I overcame it.
You've lived to tell about it and torture me from afar. So that's the way.
Tom, great to talk with you, buddy. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Christian. Have a
absolutely
great rest of the day.
All right, Tom King, Nashua Telegraph. The great Tom King joining me here on the Christian Arcand Show. You can check him out on Twitter at @Telegraph_TomK. You can read him up there in the Granite State and the Nashua Telegraph online as well. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We have one more Patriots-related segment that we got to get to, because I haven't said anything about Belichick's latest comments. I haven't had a chance, really, to talk about it, what Belichick said about what's great at college is there's no owners and no owners' kids. Just tremendous, tremendous content that I have not had a chance to address. I will do that, but first, here's Thomas with what's trending. Oh, happier times, right? It's Christian Arcand Show here. That was from the Tom Brady roast. Robert Kraft, who no one made a single joke about. And I just want to say, the more time passes from that, the fact that no one made a single joke about Robert Kraft.
Well, Jeff Ross did, then got yelled at.
He made like a half a joke. Like, it wasn't even. There was no punchline. He just was like, Messiah. Like, you know, he barely even got the thing out. But the fact that, and we asked Sam Jay about it. I asked Sam Jay, Bragg. Was there some sort of edict, some sort of mandate that you can't make fun of Robert Kraft? She said no. Which I don't know if I believe her or not. I don't know why she'd lie, but I don't know if I believe that. It was a roast. And yeah, there was things you could make fun of Brady about. There was things you could make fun of Belichick about, although we didn't know about Jordan really at that point. There was allusions to it. You remember? I think it was Gronk or maybe Edelman or someone was like, oh yeah, Bill's checking out. He's meeting his next girlfriend at the cheerleading contest or something like that. Remember that?
It was Brady talking about his favorite ring was the ring camera that caught Bill, which was at like that house in Nantucket, which
right,
lo and behold, was him sleeping out with Jordan.
There was that too, but then also either Gronk or Edelman, I forget which one, one of those two made a joke about Bill scouting his next girlfriend at some cheerleading contest or something like
Isn't
that.
Isn't it Foxborough High School or something?
I don't know if it was Foxborough High School. That's a little, maybe it was. I don't remember. But it was something like that. Either way. There was not one joke about Robert's. Just interesting. Anyway. That being said, the latest here with Belichick and the Krafts, it's still going on, by the way. It's not over. Patriots are getting ready for their season to start. UNC, Belichick, they're all getting ready for their season to start. And Bill Belichick grants an exclusive interview with Ben Volen. Because who on that? And the beat is more deserving than Mr. Volen of a one-on-one with Bill Belichick. And I just want to say that I know Volen gets a lot of crap on this station. I like Volen. I like reading the stuff. I think it's good. I thought this was great. I thought this one-on-one he did, the questions he asked, the overall piece of it was tremendous. And Kraft, not Kraft, Belichick also uses the globe once in a while. I remember that time he randomly decided to give an interview to Shaughnessy in the middle of like some beef with the Kraft. Like, it's always, he always uses them to sort of get the message out, whatever that message may be. And he's doing an interview with the Globe, so he knows that it's going to be Boston-centric. And he knows that the people reading it are going to care more about probably the Patriots and everything else than they really care about what's going on at UNC. And he knows that. And here's how it starts. So standing quietly in the hallway, the Keenan Football Center, University of North Carolina football coach Bill Belichick is asked how he would define success with his new program. A winning record, spot in the playoff, beating Duke and NC State. I don't know, Belichick grumbles. Just stringing the days together. I bet Volan was like, oh, good. You get this exclusive one-on-one. You ask him, so what would success mean? I don't know. Great. This is going to be a fun day. I'm sure at that point, Volan was probably thinking, why did I do this? Why am I getting suckered back into interviewing this curmudgeon? And here, snorting my face, answers to pretty reasonable questions. What's a measure of success for this year? It's your first year coaching in college here, Bill. What do you think? What's going to be considered a success for you? I don't know. Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks for coming out then. He asked him who the starting quarterback's going to be. We'll get right back to you, Belichick said. And then they finally got Bill to start talking. Asked him about college football and being around college football. He says, I enjoy it. I always wanted to be in college football. Sure. I grew up in college football. Great university. Great opportunity here. All stuff we've heard before. Kids are great. They work hard. They want to be good. They try. Working with a lot of people I like to work with, and I enjoy coming to work every day. That's an important quality of life. When asked about building his staff, which includes a lot of people from when he coached in New England, Michael Lombardi's there, Jamie Collins, Moses Cabrera, they all followed him to UNC. Belichick, it's more cohesive and I'd say unified. A unified view of what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it. It's a lot of football, and there's not much in your way. Belichick goes on to say, there's no owner, there's no owner's son, there's no cap. Everything that goes with the marketing and everything else, which I'm all for that, but it's way less of that at this level. Generic NFL teams have the owner, president, GM, personnel director, college director, pro director, cap guy, other consultants, and then head coach. I'd say when we had our best years in New England, we had fewer people and more of a direct vision. And as that expanded, it became harder to be successful. There's no owner. There's no owner's son. Oh, my God. What a petty man Bill Belichick is. I don't know. Maybe the Brady statue, that's what pushed him over the edge. Oh, you're going to put a statue out for this guy I discovered? Where's my statue? I don't know. I don't know what it is exactly. But he is not letting this go, huh? He is not letting it go. Boy, you better hope, Bill. You better hope you have a good year. You better hope those Tar Heels come out of the gate and that they are looking sharp. Because if they don't look good, if UNC comes out and they sputter, if this team is not a, I don't know if they're going to be a playoff team, but if they're sub-500, if they're losing conference games, then Bill Belichick is going to look like a total jackass. Even more so than you could maybe say he's looked like lately. There's no owner. There's no owner's son. Yeah, there's boosters and NIL and, you know, like there's a lot of people with their hands in the NCAA's pocket. Like this is, I'm surprised to hear him go that road. Yeah, it's not quite as much of a machine, I would say, as the NFL is. But the NCAA isn't exactly some mom-and-pop store here where everybody's hands-off and no one ever gets in your business or tells you what to do. Like, come on. That's maybe he's not seeing it quite as much. Maybe he just wants to send a message to the Crafts and the Patriots. But whatever it is, man, I don't think it's ever going to end. I think both of these guys are going to take it to the grave. There's not going to be some big resolution. There's not going to be some big kumbaya moment. And I don't think now, even though there very much should be, after these comments right here, I think that's it. No Belichick statue. I don't think they're going to make one. I don't think they're going to have one. That's a direct shot. There's no owner and there's no owner's son. For 20 years, I had to deal with an owner and an owner's son, and now I don't have to. And isn't that great? He's really taking direct shots here. I saw, it was funny. It's funny because it was Boston Globe, and then I read on Boston.com, Belichick appeared to take a shot at the Patriots. Appeared? What do you mean he appeared? What are you talking about? I appeared to be sweaty yesterday at the Marshfield Fair. No. I was just sweaty. No, he didn't appear to take a shot. He took a shot. That was a direct hit, if you want to know the truth. I know there's other owners out there and their sons, but which one of those did Belichick have to deal with? We know he had to deal with one father and son for 20-plus years, and that for a lot of those years, it was not particularly copacetic. And that stuff at the end there, too? Oh, man. When we really had success, it was when we didn't have anybody in my way. Yeah? Like Scott Pioli, for example? I remember him being in the way. I remember him being involved. You weren't exactly Mr. Personnel back then. He was, and he did a pretty good job. Now, maybe what he's trying to say is that him and Scott had a much more unified vision than anybody else that was brought in after that. But anybody else who was brought in after that just got muscled to the side by Belichick anyway, including towards the end. And let's not act like, in the end, when they were trying to make it be more collaborative, they were doing it because Bill Belichick was still killing it and there was no reason to try and make a change. The Patriots, after Brady left, were not in shambles, but not really the same team anymore. And you knew that there was going to be some growing pains. And we all thought that after that first year with Mac Jones, that Bill Belichick, with all these people in the way, right, all these collaborators that he never asked for, in 2021, Bill Belichick looked like he was on top of the world. Okay, so let's not let this get lost in the annals of history. I know I screwed up the DJ LeMahieu thing, but I remember this very, very clearly. All right, Bill Belichick, when he was fired for cause. Okay, that's important to remember. And in 2021, 3 years before all this happened, he was on top of the world. I'm not kidding. I know they got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, but Bill Belichick was on top of the world because he had a new quarterback. They were a playoff team. Your quarterback, they made into a Pro Bowler, which looking back on that now is hilarious. And people like Ryan Clark were deifying him, talking about him like he was the Lord incarnate. I'm not even kidding. This was happening. They were talking about him like he was a god. Tom Brady's gone. 2 years later, you got your new quarterback, and you're back in the playoffs. He was on top of the world, and nobody got in his way when he wanted to bring in Judge and Patricia, when he wanted to redo the offense, when he wanted to remake this whole thing in his image. Nobody got in his way. No one got in his way until it failed. And then when it failed, he got fired, and that's what happened. And that does not take away from the 20 years prior to that where he was the best coach in the world and the Patriots were the best team in the world. None of that takes away from it, so don't think I'm on here just ripping Bill and saying that what he did didn't matter. I'm not saying that. Of course it did. I still think the greatest coach of all time. But when he makes these comments, let's look at them in the context that they deserve to be in here, because no one got in his way in 2021. In 2021, he was back on top of the world. Everyone assumed that he was just going to take Mac Jones and turn him into the next Tom Brady, and that, yeah, Brady may have gone and won here in Tampa Bay, but now Belichick's getting his lick back too, and it's looking pretty good for him. And then he completely ruined it all by himself with his guys that he brought in. All right? That wasn't the Krafts that did that. That was Bill, and that's a fact. So I just don't like seeing that get the revisionist history with that, I think, is... I know he's trying to make himself look better, but that's the problem, is that it's very, very difficult for Bill to ever take accountability for anything that's ever gone wrong. He just doesn't do it. He would say, oh, we got to coach better and the games that were lost, but when it came to the big picture, it was never his fault. Nothing ever was. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to David in Duxbury. He has a thought on Robert Kraft before we take a break here. Go ahead, David.
Hey, yeah, thanks for letting me on. I don't get your anger towards Bill Belichick. I kind of view his comments as rather funny, because I think rightfully so he's taking a shot at the son of an owner, which to me it's the whole thing is so obnoxious, and Jonathan Kraft is obnoxious to think that he has a say in football, that he knows anything about football, and he should be deciding, who should be coaching, who the players should be selecting. So that's how I see it. And
so course, why shouldn't Jonathan Kraft decide who the coach is? Why shouldn't he have a say in that? The owners decide that, right? Jonathan Kraft's an owner, just like Robert is.
Yeah. But he has no qualifications other than his gene pool. He won the lottery with the gene pool. That's all he's done.
Oh, sure. I mean, so, you're right about that.
So, Belichick had a couple of bad years, and I really questioned his judgment lately, but the fact is that, they ran this Netflix thing, demeaning the guy for no reason. And they've been, honestly, they've been disrespectful towards him. So I don't blame him in the least. And I do think it's humorous. And I think Jonathan Kraft and his brothers are humorous as well.
Yeah, I agree with you there, David. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And when the Krafts come out with a comment, when Robert Kraft came out with his comment about how risky it was to hire Bill Belichick, I ripped him for that too. I did. Even though he's kind of right, when he did hire Bill, it was not exactly like the most obvious thing in the world to do. It was much riskier for him to hire Bill than it was for Bill to take that job. That's a fact. Okay, so when they had that little back and forth, sure. As far as the Apple TV and the Dynasty and all that's concerned, I ripped the hell out of the Krafts for that. I did. And you deserve to. They deserve to get ripped for that. They looked like petty little men. You know, they look like petty little men who were just so obsessed with their own legacy and their own everything, and they had to put out this stupid video to make themselves look better. And then you hear about Stacey James and this nonstop quest to try and get into the Hall of Fame, and Adam Schefter yelling and screaming about it and all that stuff, and now it's pushback and everything. It just seems like they're, and it's always kind of been like that. I remember there was a Boston Magazine article about Robert Kraft, where he would always call people and say, "This is Robert Kraft, you know who I am?" And it was just always this kind of, making sure everybody knew, and all right, just very obsessed with his own image and his own legacy and all that. And at the end of the day, there's nothing really wrong with being obsessed with that, but it does kind of get old, It becomes very tiring. It becomes exhausting for the people around you and the fans of the team that you're supposed to be putting all of your effort into making better and making sure that, guys aren't deciding not to come here because the stadium's falling apart and the weight room sucks and there's no food and there's nothing for the kids and none of this other stuff. Meanwhile, you're over here campaigning everybody, making movies and sending out books about how great you are and why you should be in the Hall of Fame. That's, I think, why people get annoyed at the Krafts, and that's absolutely every reason to be. But the Krafts weren't talking here. This is Bill. These are Bill's words, and I think Bill's words were a little ridiculous. All right, 2021, no one was getting in his way. All those mistakes that he made in 2021, he made himself. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up next here on WEEI.
Start spreading the news. We got McLaughlin. We got Tommy Freeze Pops. We got Terp.
And I'm leaving today. I'm going to be done in about 5 minutes here. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. Stick around, though. Is the trio, the three amigos. They'll take you out. How long are they going till, Chris? Or Thomas?
They're going till 4 o'clock.
Till 4 o'clock? And then what do we got? Dan Ball into pregame?
Yep.
Very nice. What a lineup. What a Sunday lineup this is. KJ, me, the trio, Dan Ball, and then Red Sox baseball coming your way. It's the Sunday night game, Red Sox and the Yankees. Sox going for the sweep. Let's take the last of these phone calls here before I sign off, and we'll start with our good friend. Well, let's start with Alex. Alex, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from
Cape.
I'm talking about Bill Belichick.
Alex, I got to tell you, Alex, wait a second. Can you take us off speakerphone, maybe, because I can barely hear you.
Yeah.
All right, why don't you work on that, and we'll come back to you. We'll come back to you, Alex, I promise. I can't put you on the air with that speakerphone. That's brutal. All right, let's go to our good friend Steve in Fall River. Hi, Steve.
How are you?
I'm good.
I told a friend when Brady had left that my fear was Robert Kraft would give Bill Belichick longer rope to keep this myth of the Patriot way together. Mm-hmm. Meaning the Patriot way was the Patriot organization, the Krafts, and Bill Belichick had this system where they had a middle class and they could just get people in and out, and they were doing things so much different.
Right.
To get rid of Bill Belichick would have admitted what the whole world, or at least I already knew, that it was Tom Brady. Keeping in mind, Tom Brady left, took his magic with him. Not only did he go to a losing franchise, he went to the Glazer family, the most losing franchise in the major sports, mm-hmm. and wins them a championship.
Yes.
So as Robert Kraft was trying for his Hall of Fame, there was a – I'm playing a little Sigmund Freud here. He didn't want to harm his legacy by biffing Belichick quickly, which he probably should have done, gave him a couple of years too much, because it would have harmed that image of the Patriot way. There was a time in the 2000s, Christian, when all the sports media and business media would call Robert and Jonathan the greatest sports operators on this planet. Would anybody say that today?
No. No one would say that today, Steve. Thanks for the call, Steve. We're up against it. Otherwise, I'd let you keep going. But we don't have a lot of time. I will say this. In some ways, Belichick and Kraft at the end were kind of, in some ways, mirror images of each other. Just look at the way they hired people. Look at how they did it. Look at how they just sort of were like, I know what's best. I know everything. I'm Bill Belichick. I'm Robert Kraft. I know exactly what I'm doing. And even though this is a pretty rash decision that a lot of people are looking at me and saying, what the hell are you doing this for? I'm blank, and I know what I'm doing. And you idiots don't know anything. And that's how you got Patricia and Judge, and that's how you got Gerard Mayo. That's exactly the way that happened, okay? There's no getting around it. You can't tell me that there was any that's exactly the same thing. Bill Belichick said, I don't need an offensive coordinator. I know what I'm doing. I'm the guy. I'm the reason why this is what it is. I can bring in anyone and win with anyone. And this quarterback here, I can bring in two of these guys who don't even know how to coach an offense. And we'll still win. And it was just, I mean, the emperor had no clothes at all. And then Kraft kicks Bill to the curb. Rightfully so. He was done. It was over. And says, I know who to bring in. And I know better than all of you. Yeah, you might think to follow Bill Belichick, we should go with somebody else, a little more experienced. Someone who's had a little bit more hands-on experience at the very least, you know, at the head coaching level or something. But no. I'm going to go with Gerard Mayo. You know why? I'm going to go with Gerard Mayo because we went to Israel and he really impressed me at the airport. And I know better than you, and you guys don't know like I do. You don't know like me. I've had to make all these hires. I'm the boss. I know what I'm doing. You guys have no idea. And he went out and he hired Gerard Mayo and just, in fairness, recognized the mistake fast enough that he was able to say, okay, I screwed up here. As did Bill with Judge and Patricia. But by then it was too late. And also, Kraft owns the team, Bill doesn't. But it was very, very similar instances of people just smelling their own farts so much that they think they can do anything. And it's going to work. And it doesn't work like that. That's not the way life works. Want to say thanks to Tom King. Shout-outs to Thomas. Great job. Stick around. You got Freeze Pops. You got Scott McLaughlin. And you got Justin Turpin here for the next 3 hours. I'm Christian Arcan. I'll talk to you on Monday. See ya.